Thank you very much, Roger. We do have about 10 minutes for Q&A, so I'll just let you field them directly, Roger.
They're not on it yet, Arnold. The question was, what about the ratings agencies, Moody's, Standard & Poor's? Are they on to these kind of expanded risk considerations? And the answer is, so far, to my knowledge, the answer is no.
Well, how have they been rating the Chinese state funds?
I can't remember. It's like a triple B. Some folks might know what it is specifically. Arnold asked, what about the actual ratings of China today by Standard & Poor's, Moody's, those types? And I can't remember whether it's the precise rating, but I can tell you that that they're the investment grade, they can be held by the pension funds, to my knowledge, yes. And remember, these the companies I'm talking about, like CNPC, China National Petroleum, and Sinopec, these are the two largest entities in China. And we're not talking about some, you know, marginal types. And in fact, CNPC is the fourth largest oil company in the world by size. So you can be sure that, look, they're raising money on 10-year terms for a few basis points over the cost of funds. This is the greatest free lunch program in the history of man, from at least that I've seen so far. Yes?
My name is Omar Alcliff. I'm an assistant professor of sociology at Ashland University, and I'm also on the board of directors of the Minaret of Freedom Institute, a free market think tank in Bethesda, Maryland. I really enjoyed your speech, and I was wondering if I could make a short comment and then ask a question. If you don't mind, I'd like to make a friendly amendment to what you said about Sudan, and that is, I don't think by any stretch of the imagination we can call it an Islamic regime that violates Islamic principles left and right.
I'll take your point.
In terms of my question, I think all of us in this room agree that we have to destroy communism, and we definitely want to achieve that goal, but we may disagree on the means. So we could have political means using the military. We could have social means, perhaps by exporting Alec Baldwin and Indiana Jones movies to China, but that may take a while. So what about economic means? And I'm specifically referring to what I guess we could call the South Africa option. In other words, we make them economically dependent on us, and then we stick them at the right time, squeeze them real hard, bring them down. In a sense, the same way the Suharto dictatorship in Indonesia was brought down for economic reasons rather than political.
Well, I would only say that if we stick it to them, which in principle sticking it to them is something that we should have done even more robustly on our surveillance aircraft, for example. But when we talk about the markets, I think that most folks in the room would accept that we are dealing with a fragile mechanism here. I think that if we were to lure them in and then do the cutoff, the signal that we'd be sending to the world would be quite debilitating to what is a precious commodity, which is the perception of the world that we have the freest, fairest markets on the planet, particularly in the capital markets where I said we are dominant. We don't want to give that dominance away because we're seen as unduly unreliable or there's going to be some politically motivated stab taken. I think that's too draconian. But and we've wrestled with how to play this, and ironically, we've come up, as I said, with what I think is a very interesting, very market-oriented approach, which is disclosure and transparency. I mean, how do you oppose that? What are you for, non-disclosure and non-transparency? The question is, can these guys, the bad actors, I'm not talking about the genuinely benign baby food manufacturers or that guy that is building the hydroelectric plant, but For the PLA, for that intelligence or tech theft front company, or for the aider and abettor of genocide in Sudan, disclosure indicates can they withstand the light of day? And the poetry of the thing is, if they have material omissions to the SEC, if they don't tell the true story and engage in inaccuracies, it's legally actionable. You have a class action lawsuit. So it's not as though we're not without recourse. And I think that's the way to go. Thank you.
Okay, one more question.
Yes.
I have a simple question. Money is fungible. Dollars that are raised for one purpose, as you correctly point out, can be used for another. But when you're dealing with a centrally controlled economy, I can't see how you can ever segregate the baby food manufacturer or the guy who is trying to make a sewing machine plant in Ceylon province. I don't see how you can do that. One could almost make an argument that a close embargo is a better way to go in terms of all financial flows to Red China.
Where you have collateralized accounts in the charge of the lender, where you have a progress payments like you would if you added a section to your house, you know, they're going to want to see the architect's plans. They're going to want to disperse when they deem that you're ready to go and it's not going for some new BMW. I mean, these problems are faced every day. Now, yes, at some level, money's always fungible, but you can do an awful lot these days with established lending techniques to constrain the ability of a centrally controlled and an increasingly less centrally controlled China, I might add, to be able to move monies around. When you take a $12 to $13 billion net hit in the U.S. cap markets last year, and you walk away with 13, and you know you lost 13 to divestment campaigns and IPO opposition campaigns, you've taken a major hit. When you have a $400 billion to $600 billion, depending on the estimates, banking crisis in China, when you have a vastly underfunded pension program, when you have a state-owned sector that is still taking the vast amount of resources of the country for inefficient purposes, and you can't lay those people off without having, as for those who saw the front page of the New York Times a couple of days ago, the need to send in troops to quell unrest, you've got a need for tens of billions of dollars a year. There's some say that you can, and I'll wrap up here, there's some say that you can go, look, they'll just go to Hong Kong and get the money. They'll go to Europe and get the money. What's the big deal? Alan Greenspan himself has argued that. Well, let me tell you how that works. Oh, you can get the money all right if you pay a very healthy premium. And over time, those are much thinner volume markets. When you need billions of dollars a year, in the banking business, we call it booking up. You're booking up that exposure. You're not able to, over time, attract those funds. And what are you doing to your risk portfolio? If you're a big enterprise and you're excluded from the U.S. capital markets because you're a proliferator of weapons of mass destruction, when you go to Hong Kong, who's going to buy? Is it going to be CalPERS? Is it going to be TIAA CREF? Not unless they have some kind of political death wish. So the point is, even when you're issuing stocks and bonds overseas, guess who's buying it? We are, the bulk of it. So I would argue in closing that this is one of the most potent tools that we enter the 21st century with. If we manage this in a carefully crafted, prudent way, focused on disclosure and transparency, we can preserve the integrity of our free markets, and we can do material harm to those that would do us harm. Thank you very much.